I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. For decades, there's been an epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls across the United States. The National Justice Institute estimates that 84% of Native American women experience violence in their lifetime. And in some Indigenous communities, women are murdered at a rate 10 times the national average.
I've had 6 family members that are either missing or murdered. I just remember growing up with all of these stories, because from a young age, you wonder where your grandparents are. You wonder where your family is and why they're not around or what happened to them.
That's Jennifer Boyce, the campaign chair of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Relatives of Utah. And she joined me at The Takeaway at a live event in Salt Lake City this summer.
I also have another cousin, Larissa Lone Hill, who is missing at this time. She's been missing for over 2 years from my tribe in South Dakota. And she just disappeared one day, and they don't know what's happened to her. And that happens every day. This is normal for us.
Just last week, President Donald Trump signed an executive order establishing a White House task force called Operation Lady Justice to address the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women. Joining me now is Rebecca Nagel, a Cherokee writer and host of the podcast This Land. Rebecca, thanks for joining us again on The Takeaway.
Thank you so much for having me.
What are some of the key points of Trump's task force?
Donald Trump created a task force that brings together different agencies within the executive branch to look at the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women. It came right on the heels of William Barr, the Attorney General, making an announcement that the Department of Justice was going to increase its efforts to address the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women. And so the Department of Justice's new initiative will invest about $1.5 million to hire specialized coordinators and U.S. attorneys' offices. And so these are the offices that can prosecute crimes that happen in Indian country. And so they're going to basically put more resources towards it.
I think it was surprising for a lot of folks, given the political constituency that is involved here. And this isn't something that you would say the president is really appealing to his base. What was it that spurred the Attorney General Barr's visit? And what was it that inspired the president to create this task force to begin with?
I can't answer that question specifically about what personally motivated Donald Trump. The timing is interesting in that a lot happened in the span of a few days, policy-wise, to address the crisis of violence against missing and murdered Indigenous women. And so two bills passed the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, Savannah's Act and the Not Invisible Act. And it's notable that a lot of the measures that William Barr put forward in his announcement are actually included are things that the Department of Justice would be required to do under Savannah's Act. The other thing that happened is that Senate Republicans introduced their own version of the Violence Against Women Act on Thursday, so just days before Trump's announcement, in a bill that many advocates say actually rolls back protections for Native women. And so, you know, it's been a complicated couple weeks. Sometimes it feels like we're taking 2 steps forward and 3 steps back.
What exactly does the crisis look like right now for Indigenous women? Why is the Department of Justice action necessary?
So, as you mentioned in the top, the statistics are really high and really scary. So, 8 in 10 Native women will experience violence in our lifetime. That includes rape, abuse, or stalking. And the National Institute of Justice from the Department of Justice also found that 1 in 3 Native women will experience violence every year. The other problem is that the rates of murder are extremely high. And while there's actually no national database in places where there has been research in some areas, the rate of murder against Native women is 10 times higher than the national average. And, you know, the reporting from the Department of Justice on missing and murdered Indigenous women is pretty dismal. The Urban Indian Health Institute released a report last year that showed that in 2016, there were at least 5,712 cases of missing and murdered Indigenous girls, but only 116 18 of those cases were actually logged by the Justice Department in their database. And so, you know, Native women aren't only going missing in real life, but are also going missing in the data and in the reporting.
The task force was announced shortly before a similar piece of legislation called Savannah's Act, which was voted out of committee in the Senate. What was that? What was Savannah's Act?
So Savannah's Act is actually a bill that was originally introduced in 2017, and it was named after a woman named Savannah Graywind, who was very violently and tragically murdered in 2017. And actually, she was pregnant at the time, and her child was cut out of her stomach. It was a really, really, really sad case. The outcry that happened after her murder grew into this piece of legislation. It was actually really close to passing last year. And one lone Republican congressman, a representative from Virginia named Bob Goulart, held it up. And so it's had to be reintroduced and go through that process again. So Savannah's Act does a few things. It mostly works on improving data sharing, reporting, and police response to missing and murdered Indigenous women. And so it works on, you know, that problem I talked about before where there's just a lack of data.
Aside from the creation of this task force, a big part of the story is Congress's failure to renew the Violence Against Women Act, which lapsed in February. How does this act affect Indigenous women specifically?
Yeah, so as I reported for The Guardian, the Senate Republicans introduced their own version of a reauthorization bill to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act the same day, actually, that Savannah's Act passed committee, and just a day before William Barr's and the Department of Justice's announcement. And that bill actually rolled back protections for Native women. Just to back up and give some background, in the late 1970s, the Supreme Court made a decision that then prohibited tribes from prosecuting non-Native people who commit crimes on our land. And so if you're not a citizen of a tribe, you can go onto tribal land and you can steal stuff, you can sell drugs, you can commit murder, and the tribe is prohibited from prosecuting you. What we've seen because of that decision in the past few decades, while violent crime has trended down nationally, it has skyrocketed in Indian country because very violent people know that they can commit these crimes basically with impunity. In 2013, advocates worked really hard to restore tribal jurisdiction over the crimes of domestic violence. And so all those other crimes still can't be prosecuted by tribes, like sexual assault, even child abuse. What advocates are pushing for in the next reauthorization of VAWA is to expand tribal jurisdiction over the crimes of sexual assault, sex trafficking, and also crimes that concur with domestic violence, like child abuse or even witness intimidation, because that's something that happens a lot when those crimes are actually prosecuted. Those are some of the measures that are in the bill that passed the House and that have been introduced in the Senate and co-sponsored by all the Democrats in the Senate, by 47 Democrats. What Senate Republicans introduced 2 weeks ago Thursday is a bill that actually in many ways rolls back the gains that were made in 2013. They proposed a few things. It would make it easier for non-Native perpetrators who don't want to follow the tribal judicial system to skirt it and appeal to a federal court. It would also make it easier for non-Native perpetrators to sue a tribe if they feel their civil rights have been violated. And one of the last things that the bill does that, you know, many advocates felt like was a slap in the face is that it puts burdens on tribal courts that the federal government doesn't require of municipal courts, doesn't require of county courts, doesn't require of state courts. And one of those things would be an audit from the U.S. Attorney General's office. The Department of Justice in its own study found that, you know, their recommendation is that, you know, tribal sovereignty be restored and that tribes be able to exercise jurisdiction over these crimes that are happening at incredibly high rates.
Rebecca Nagel is a Cherokee writer and host of the podcast This Land. Rebecca, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.